Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine with you on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 10 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Friday, March the 30th. Happy to have you along, and I hope you'll join in as we talk with someone I'm sure you have seen a lot of on television, perhaps best known as Dr. B.J. Honeycutt in the hit series MASH. Mike Farrell is still seen quite a bit on television these days, speaking out against the war in Iraq and other current issues. I just saw him the other night talking with Bill O'Reilly on Fox News about the current tension with Iran. And about his new book, his memoir, Just Call Me Mike, A Journey to Actor and Activist. We will talk about that journey with him this hour and with you. Please join in by calling 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890. Or send us an email to talk@wpr.org. talk@wpr.org. Please include your first name and your community with your email. I'm sure Mike, as he wants to be called, will be happy to address current issues with you, like the latest on Iraq and Iran, and about his career in television and what it was like being on MASH and how MASH helped form his political beliefs. Mike Farrell, an actor best known for his 8 years on MASH and his 5 seasons on the TV show Providence, is also a writer, director, producer. He is also co-chair emeritus of Human Rights Watch in Southern California. He co-founded Artists United to Win Without War. He is also president of Death Penalty Focus, where he speaks, writes, and coordinates efforts to stop executions. His recently published memoir is called Just Call Me Mike, A Journey to Actor and Activist. And Mike will be in the Midwest next week at book signing events in Ann Arbor, Michigan, in Chicago and Oak Park, Illinois, in St. Paul and Minneapolis, Minnesota. He joins us this morning from Boston. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm fine. Thanks for being with us.
Pleasure. Thank you for asking.
You're going to be going to your hometown of St. Paul next week.
I am. It'd be nice to be back.
Yeah, born in St. Paul, but you grew up in Southern California.
Yes, indeed.
You had a modest family, though. It wasn't a big Hollywood family.
Yeah. It was a fairly big family, but not much of a Hollywood family, no.
You were a newspaper delivery boy to the stars.
I was a grocery delivery boy to the stars and newspapers earlier than that, yes.
Yeah. And did you always want to be in the acting business?
Well, ever since I was a kid, you know, there's a little bit of a sense of if you live in the lumber town, you go to work in the mill, but it was also a reality. My father worked in the studios. I went to school with kids who were in the business, and I think the most motivating factor was my father. My sister brought home motion picture magazines, movie magazines that had pictures of stars getting all this adulation, and I thought, gee, that would sure be nice.
Yeah, and so you also, though, I was surprised to read, were a Marine.
Yes, a lot of people are surprised at that. I'm not quite sure why, but yes, when I got out of high school, college really wasn't on the agenda in my family, and the draft was coming up, and rather than be drafted in the Army, I decided I'd be a man or learn how to be a man and join the Marines.
Yeah, and this was, the Vietnam War was going on, but this wasn't when it was at its height?
No, in fact, the Vietnam War hadn't yet started. That was late 50s when I joined the Marines, so I was lucky enough to be in service between the two conflicts and didn't see combat.
Yeah. So how did you forming your political beliefs and getting politically involved as you are?
Well, I think, you know, I think that happens with all people on an incremental level, and part of it began when I was in the service. I had developed a friendship with a fellow who was black, and that created some consternation among some of my mates, and that surprised me because growing up on the West Coast, racism, while it was certainly real, it was not in your face the way it is in some parts of the country, or what I would like to say was, I think perhaps still is, and that kind of began to pique my interest. After the service, I drove a car through the South, which brought into my face this whole reality of Jim Crow that I had thought, frankly, was a thing of the past and was not. Beyond that, it was John Kennedy was the first president I was old enough to vote for. I was thrilled at his presidency and devastated by his murder, as we all were, upset at the way in which the media handled the whole process, the Vietnam War, the various liberation movements that began to surface in the 60s. There were so many things that it was hard not to become politicized.
Yeah, I read that you were involved in getting a group together to question the Warren Commission's findings.
Indeed, yes. I never thought that the answers were as simple as they were presented to us, and I joined a group that was being formed at in Los Angeles, and we questioned the Warren Commission, felt that the results of the commission report were really, again, another pat on the head rather than a really incisive examination of what happened. And we did some lecturing and showed the Zapruder film, which was something that most people hadn't seen, and simply tried to lobby for a full public investigation, which has never, in my estimation, actually been done. But there were some investigations subsequent, and as you're probably aware, a couple of them, one congressional one, ended up suggesting that they thought that the assassination was the result of a conspiracy.
Mm-hmm. Now, while you're getting your feet wet here in this political and social justice involvement, were you acting at the time too?
Well, let's see. Yes and no. Mm-hmm. I was trying to build a career, and that didn't begin until the early 60s. And building a career is a long process, or at least it was for me, and was for most people, I think, in those years. So doing theater and doing workshops and doing the kind of little one-line things and the kinds of roles that one uses to build a resume until the casting people and the producers trust you to do a little bigger part, and then you try to do a little bigger part and work your way up the rungs of the ladder.
Yeah, and when did Days of Our Lives come along?
In the late 60s, 68, I think, and 69, Days of Our Lives happened, which was a big break for me. Two years it ended up being on a soap opera that was, soaps are a whole industry today, but then they were half-hour, usually black-and-white shows that people didn't regard very highly, but it was a tremendously important training ground for me, at any rate, and I was thrilled to have the job.
Yeah. Well, we'll talk about MASH and more of Mike Farrell's political activism coming up after we check our weather forecast. We are talking with Mike Farrell, and you can too. He is actor, an activist, and now the author of his memoir, Just Call Me Mike, A Journey to Actor and Activist. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 19 minutes past 7 o'clock. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are talking with Mike Farrell. He is actor and star of several TV series, including MASH and Providence, and we are talking with him about his recently published memoir called Just Call Me Mike, A Journey to Actor and Activist. Tell us about the title of your book. That's because people wondered, do I call you an actor? Do I call you an activist? What exactly, when you would make various public appearances, how should people address you? And you said, just call me Mike.
Well, I think, we have a tendency in this country, and particularly in the part of the media, to label people and stick them in categories. And I try to avoid that because I think it cuts off communication. So instead of being called, a Saddam lover or a leftist or a communist or an actor or an activist or any of those things that sort of let people think of you as a part of a something that they understand completely, I said, well, just call me Mike and let's talk and we can figure out what we think about things.
Yeah. Your politics are progressive. Would that be fair to say?
In most instances, I would think that would be fair. Yes.
Yeah. You were talking with Bill O'Reilly the other night, and I happened to catch that. And Bill O'Reilly is a fan of your book. He even wrote a blurb on your book, talking about what a stand-up guy you are. So
isn't that amazing? Bill and I have this odd relationship where we disagree about everything, and yet he treats me respectfully, and I've never been able to fully understand it, but I do appreciate it.
Yeah. In your book, too, though, you also refer to, well, you know, call me an activist, call me an actor, don't call me that, call me Mike. How about calling me a citizen? You think that this is what all of us should be doing?
Well, indeed. Mm. I think that, you know, the responsibility of citizenship, particularly citizenship in the United States, carries with it terrific responsibility. And I think that we need to take that more seriously as people, given what's happening in the world. We have the opportunity to provide a beacon of hope for the rest of the world instead of tromping around the world like the neighborhood bully. And I think that we have to, when we don't agree with what's going on in terms of the administration policies, we need to let that be known.
Yeah. Did your views and your activism hurt you at all in your Hollywood career?
Oh, it's hard to know. I don't remember except in one instance, I don't remember anybody actually saying that. But I'm sure there are producers who've said, you know, he's a troublemaker or whatever. I don't want to work with him. But I've always figured that it probably balances out with other producers who say they would want to work with me for that very reason.
Yeah. We also, though, have heard some critics say, hey, you know, entertain me on your TV show or in your career. We don't care what your political views are. Keep those to yourself.
Oh, sure. Mm. And those are people who, of course, disagree with my political views. But it seems to me that just because I happen to have gotten lucky and gotten a job in a television show that people watched and got the opportunity to have media point cameras and microphones at me, that doesn't mean that I check in my passport and my citizenship. If I have views about things, I want to be able to speak them just as much as I wish the cameras and microphones would be pointed in the faces of the plumbers and homemakers and nurses and teachers who really need to be heard in this country.
Yeah. Talk a little bit about your time on MASH and whether that did help shape your political views or were they already formed at the time?
Well, course, being in any situation helps form your views about things, but certainly I was politically active and politically aware to whatever degree before I became part of MASH. What MASH really provided was more opportunity both to be involved and to learn. As a result of being part of MASH, I was invited to be part of a refugee aid and development organization that took me overseas, and that helped open my eyes to things that I had known intellectually but really had never experienced personally and emotionally. And those experiences moved me more directly into the human rights arena. So MASH, I have to credit MASH for a great number of things, as well as having been a wonderful experience.
Yeah, it also says here that when you were on a fact-finding trip to El Salvador in the early 80s, your TV experience as a doctor helped you in real life.
Well, helped is an interesting term. I had been involved in Central America for a long time and was asked to be, by Amnesty International, to accompany a doctor from the United States who was doing a surgery on a wounded guerrilla comandante because nobody in El Salvador would do it. And when we got there, I was pressed into service by this doctor who had hoped that there was going to be a Salvadoran doctor or surgical nurse to help him. And that person simply was not made available, and he told me that I had to put on gloves and a gown and assist him, and I I almost fell over dead. This is not, I kept saying, Doc, this is not something that I know how to do. I pretended for a long time, but I don't really cut into people. But he said, either you help me or this surgery doesn't take place, and so I did.
Yeah. We have a caller, Richard in Menominee Falls, who'd like to talk with you. Hi, Richard. You're on the air.
Good morning, Joy. Good morning, Mike. It's a pleasure to talk to you.
Thanks.
I must say that as much of fans of yours that my wife and I have been through the years, when you became an activist, we became even greater fans.
Thank you. The comment
that I'd like to hear from you, though, is something that really is, I think, something that's a trend that really bothers me. Last night we're watching the video of Karl Rove doing his fun little dance, and, you know, hey, people do fun little dances, but I think what bothered me the most was to see David Gregory in the background having a good time. And what really bothers me is the media media today, and the media takes a lot of rap for a lot of things, and I've not been a media basher, but I think the thing that bothers me the most about the media is when they coerce with, play with, and try to become friends with the administration, regardless if it's the administration in today or another administration. I believe it compromises their ability to be able to be objective and truly ask those tough questions because they're chums, and I'm just curious to hear your comments on that.
Well, I agree with you, actually. I think people in the media, particularly inside the Beltway in Washington, are faced with a real dilemma, and that is the possibility of developing social relationships with people that give them inside access. And on the other hand, just as you suggested, that inside access and those relationships, I believe, harm their ability to see things objectively and certainly harm or make less likely their willingness to be critical. So I don't know exactly what to suggest, but I do think that the familiarity that seems to be bred really does harm to the objectivity of the reporting.
Yes, I happened to see Dan Rather on the Bill Maher show a couple of weeks ago. He was very vehement about the same fact, and he basically said he felt in the same trap at times, but that was one of the real dangers of the media. And I would hope that at some point in time that the media would gain control of this. And I understand what you're saying about being inside the Beltway. It's tough. You know, you want to be chums because you want to be able to get close, but at the same time, I can't believe that you can be and that you can be as tough with and ask the questions you need to ask when you've been having dinner and playing and dancing with them like a goofball there on the stage.
So. I think that's quite right, and I think it's a real dilemma for people in the media to figure out how to deal with it appropriately.
Yeah. Do you, Mike Farrell, though, think that the media in general are giving the Bush administration a pass these days? It seems as though they're being pretty tough on them.
Well, I think they are being pretty tough on them, or fairly tough on them, but I don't, I tell you, they don't express the outrage that I feel, and that's only one piece of it. The other piece of it is I think the media has been a lapdog of the Bush administration for the first probably 5 years of its existence, maybe even 5.5 years, and is trying to make up now, and appropriately so, for having dropped the ball on this whole thing with the war in Iraq and so many other issues that they were fearful of getting into before. So it's a double-edged sword, but I do appreciate that more is being done today in terms of serious looking at what the what's inside the workings of the Bush administration.
Yeah, I want to talk more about some of the current issues, but let me go next to Jeff in Superior. Hi, Jeff.
Hi, good morning. And yeah, Mike, I was the same guy who talked to you on the Larry King show the other night. I have a question. Do you think that MASH represented, and shows like that around the time of MASH, represented a high watermark in television? And that since then, everything, especially the past 10 years or so, have just gone from dumb to dumber.
Well, it's difficult, you know, for me to be objective about the show that I consider to be one of the best that's ever been on television. I think MASH was a high water mark and continues to be, and I think the audience continued response to it argues in support of that position. But I'm really upset by what's going on in television today, with the caveat that there are still some good shows with thoughtful people doing them and some real creativity. The general run of shows is really, I think, disturbing, and disturbing from a personal perspective, from an artistic perspective, but also from a perspective of one who realizes that the impact of television on our society is a great one, a far greater, I think, than many people realize. Yeah. So your concept about dumbing down the audience is something that worries me greatly.
We're going to check news from National Public Radio and then continue talking with Mike Farrell about his journey from actor to activist. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Happy to have you along at 7:36 on this Friday, March the 30th. We are talking with Mike Farrell this hour. He is probably best known for his starring roles in the TV series MASH and Providence. He's a writer, a director, a producer, and he is an activist. He has worked in the areas of human rights, and he co-founded Artists United to Win Without War. He is the president of a group that speaks out against the death penalty. And he is also the author of his just-published memoir, Just Call Me Mike, A Journey to Actor and Activist. And we welcome your calls and questions for him. He's happy to talk to you about his work on TV and his work as an activist and talk about some current issues and like the war in Iraq and maybe the situation in Iran. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890. Or send an email to talk@wpr.org. And our next caller is Darren in Eau Claire. Hi, Darren. You're on the air.
Good morning. Hi, Mike.
Hi. How are you?
Good. Say, a while back, and I think this goes back to before we even went into Iraq, I saw a story about some polling that had been done in several different countries, and it seemed that in many countries where they had negative impressions about the United States, they were also tended to be big connoisseurs of American television and movies, and I just thought it puzzled me as to a lot of people in your industry that are activists, they tend to say, you know, we should foster better relations with these kind of countries, but, you know, your industry hasn't necessarily put the United States in a very good light over the years. I wonder what your thoughts were concerning that.
Well, I think that's a mistake to suggest that people's reaction to being invaded by American television and motion pictures is a result of the political views of actors. I think what's happening is that culturally there are a lot of people who feel that American culture is invading and somehow overwhelming the cultures of their nations. And I think that's part of this process of globalization and partly the dominance that the American media has the world over. But I don't quite know what it is we can do about that, other than try as people to be sensitive to the needs of other people and other cultures, and to try to be as respectful as we can.
Yeah, talk a little bit about your thoughts on whether the entertainment industry, the Hollywood in general, should maybe even be more active in producing movies and the like that are educational to the public and maybe get more people involved in the issues that you're involved in.
Well, of course, I would love that, mm-hmm. but unfortunately, the business is a business, and it's driven by the desire for profit, and mostly, unfortunately, today by people who see the value of something only in how much money it returns rather than what is said within the borders of the project, whether it be television or film. So, we continue to struggle, all of us, to try to find ways to do things that are meaningful and helpful and enlighten the audience. When I say we, those of us who are trying to do that don't necessarily control the business.
Yeah. Rosie O'Donnell, on The View now, and certainly former talk show host herself and comedian, is in some hot water these days because just the other day she said that, it was the fault of the British sailors who were captured by Iran for being in Iranian waters, thinking that this was a deliberate and that this was to spark a war with Iran, and also made comments about 9/11 being an inside government job. And there are some speaking out that she shouldn't be on this program, The View, with such kooky views.
Well, Rosie is a polemicist. There's no question about it. And she likes going right to the core of things and getting under people's skin. I think that's probably why they have her on the show. I don't agree with her suggestion, if she made it and I didn't hear it, that 9/11 was an inside job. But I thought Bill O'Reilly's use of a clip of hers referring to the Tonkin Gulf incident with regard to this British capture of the British troops was misinterpreted by O'Reilly. What she was saying was that an incident like this, in the case of Tonkin Gulf, an incident that in fact did not happen, was used to escalate us into a war situation, and that was something we should be very wary of with regard to this incident of the British troops or sailors being taken hostage by the Iranians. And as I tried to explain on O'Reilly, he and many people are misinterpreting what has happened. While I don't agree with them having taken those hostages, I think they will be returned shortly, and I think that that we have to remember that a couple of things apply here. One is that this has happened before, and in fact it turned out the British troops or British Navy did trespass in Iranian waters. And secondly, the whole business of this brinksmanship that the Bush administration has been responsible for vis-a-vis the U.S. and Iran has set up tensions in a way that has facilitated the worst elements of the Iranian government to make their points and bluster and try to become more popular. And I think we're playing into the hands of the wrong people.
Yeah. The Iranians or the faction that has those British sailors hostage said they would release the female sailor, but then did not. And it seems as though things are escalating. We have the Navy, our U.S. Navy, making maneuvers in the Gulf now to show support for Great Britain, and Tony Blair making comments that you know, this might escalate if we don't get these hostages back. You're confident that that Iran will release these sailors and all will be well?
Well, I am, but I think it's going to require, you know, some diplomacy. I don't think these things happen by themselves. I don't think they can be viewed in as a singular episode. They're part of a context, an ongoing context, and I think that if we will stop the saber rattling and begin to have conversations, we can get those people back, just as they did in 2004. And I think we have to remember, as I tried to say to O'Reilly, first of all, that there are factions within Iran. This is not a unitary government, as Mr. Bush would like to create here, that only speaks with one voice or only represents all of the people by the voices that are speaking. In 2003, I believe it was, the Iranian government, through the Swiss government, made overtures to the United States that they would be willing to discuss any issue if dialogue was open between the two countries. And any issue includes both the nuclear development and the existence of or continued relationships with the State of Israel. So the refusal of the United States to consider that seems to me to have been a huge mistake.
We will go now to John in Milwaukee. Hi, John.
Yeah, hi. Thank you for taking my call. I want to ask Mike, you know, a question about Vietnam. You know, the Americans had no right in protecting Vietnam from communist liberation. Now, my question is, who gave the Americans the right to protect South Korea from communist liberation? So if it wasn't for the Americans, South Korea today would have been a liberated state like North Korea. Maybe he's got some comments on that. Thank you. Bye.
Well, I would differ with the concept of liberation. I think that the United States did wrong personally in going into Vietnam, certainly in the force we did and the way in which we did. As far as the people of South Korea, if your suggestion is that the people of South Korea would be liberated like the people of North Korea if the international force that was involved in the Korean police action stayed out, I think that's ludicrous on its face. Nobody in South Korea that I'm aware of wants to be in the same position as the people in North Korea. And I think that the international community responded to a threat at that time in the way it felt appropriate. I personally would like to see war be the last resort rather than the first resort. And I can't tell you what all of the elements were that brought about the police action in Korea, but I do know that the people of South Korea would not like to be under the thumb of Kim Jong-il and living in the way in which their brothers and sisters in North Korea are today.
We're talking with Mike Farrell. He is the author of a just-published memoir, Just Call Me Mike, A Journey to Actor and Activist. Mike Farrell, you certainly know from his years on the hit TV show MASH, and you very well might know him for his involvement in various peace and justice and social issues. He has spent quite a bit of time of late speaking out on issues like the war in Iraq. And we welcome your questions for him and your thoughts for him. 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This is the Ideas Network. I'm Joy Cardine, talking with Mike Farrell, who is the author of Just Call Me Mike, A Journey to Actor and Activist. And our next caller for him is Charles in Kenosha. Hi, Charles.
Hi, how are you?
Doing okay. How are you?
Mr. Farrell, are you there?
Yes.
I'm a big supporter of you. I think you're a true patriot for speaking out during a time where I think most people are afraid to speak out on the real issues. My question to you, sir, is why isn't the Democratic Party that's now in control even mentioning the fact of impeachment hearings, or because clearly international laws of war engagement have been violated, the Constitution has been violated. Why aren't we talking about impeaching this man that's running our country?
Well, I think a number of people are talking about it, and Nancy Pelosi has indicated that it's not on the table from the perspective of her leadership. A lot of people disagree with that, but this is a very difficult time for the Democratic Party, and I think they're dealing with it as best they know how. The Bush administration's policies have moved things so far to the right that they have to take it back incrementally from a situation where they now have a delicate majority in both, and certainly in the Senate, and a better majority in the House. And they're going to have to do things that have both the impact they want and have the benefits to the society that they hope to bring about. So the question of whether or not, and I don't disagree with you at all, that there are certainly grounds for impeachment. The question of whether or not impeachment is the best thing to pursue at this point is really one for better minds than mine, I think. But I don't frankly support the idea that we ought to be expending our energies on impeaching the man when they can undercut his policies, get these troops home, put an end to the war, and do the other things that are necessary without doing something that could feed into the notion of kind of sour grapes politics rather than advancing the needs of the nation.
Now, the Senate passed that bill that ties a timetable for withdrawing troops from Iraq with the funding of the troops mm-hmm. that the president has said he would veto. What do you think of it seems like there's some politics being played here, too.
Oh, of course there are, and there's no question. But in my view, those are the good kinds of politics, and it was a surprise to me, frankly. I was on the Hill the other night, and it was a surprise to me that the Senate was able to push through that resolution involving a date certain. But there's still a tremendous amount of hard work that has to be done, and they have to get through this whole thing with Gonzales and whether or not Karl Rove is ever going to be asked to tell the truth and all of these other issues that are taking everybody's attention. So it's a terribly complex time, I think, and those of us who want to see justice done and see accountability be required of these people, I think really have to be a bit patient.
Yeah. Well, some commentators are saying that the president's going to veto this bill, and then the Congress will turn around and give him a bill that doesn't put a timetable on the funding because the Congress can't look like they're denying troops funding.
It's going to be a really interesting standoff, and mm-hmm. I'm interested to see what happens.
Yeah. What about that Gonzales thing? Do you think that Alberto Gonzales should resign or be fired for the handling of that, the firing of those U.S. attorneys?
I think he should resign and or be fired for a number of things, including being part of this whole torture memo and all the other ugliness that this administration has visited on people. He's been a disgraceful attorney general, in my view, and I don't think he will be fired because I don't think this president has the willingness to admit to having made an error, and therefore it's going to be a function of Gonzales throwing himself on his own sword. But I do believe he needs to go.
Yeah, we just heard in NPR News that the president did make some sort of comment that Alberto Gonzales will have to dig himself out of this mess, kind of a comment.
Well, a typical way to absent himself from any responsibility here.
Yeah. Let's go back to the phones. Mike in Greenfield is with us now. Hi, Mike.
Hi. Hi, Mike. Clearly.
Hi.
I wanted to know if MASH was really a satire or a commentary on Vietnam, because every time I watched that, I always thought that it looked, even though it was supposed to be North Korea, if that was really a commentary on Vietnam and war, and if that was so, would that also apply to today?
Well, yes and yes. Certainly, it was based on a book that was written by a doctor who was in Korea, so it was in fact about Korea. But everybody understood when the movie came out, the Robert Altman movie came out in 68, that it was a truly important anti-war statement that was against the Vietnam War, but anti-war in general. And I think it couldn't be more appropriate today to be talking about just exactly the kinds of things we were talking about on MASH. Blood is not spilled without cost. We have to have reasons to go to war, and the reasons that are being given us cannot be lies, as they have been in the past, as they have been in this current situation. And young people whose lives are being torn asunder don't deserve to be used as political cannon fodder.
Thanks very much, Mike, for the call. We have time for you if you would like to get in these next 5 minutes or so to talk with Mike Farrell, actor and activist, author of Just Call Me Mike, A Journey to Actor and Activist, 1-800-642-1234, in Madison, 263-1890. You said, Mike Farrell, that you were on Capitol Hill the other night. Were you just curious or testifying for something or what?
Oh, no, I was in Washington promoting this book and meeting some friends, Senator Tom Harkin and Congresswoman Maxine Waters and a number of others. Congressman Jim McGovern and a number of others set up an event for me to meet a bunch of people and speak to them about the book and about what I was doing these days and about my view on certain things. And it was really fun to see a lot of my friends and hear from them what the situation they're facing now and what kind of negotiations are going on.
Yeah. Are you active now in any presidential campaign, or is there a candidate out there that you like?
There are a lot of very appealing candidates out there, but I think it's awfully early to be involved in a political campaign, I mean a presidential campaign, when we don't yet know who the nominee is going to be. I do think Senator Obama is a very promising candidate. I think John Edwards is a very promising candidate. I know a number of the other candidates who are there and admire many of them. I just think that there's a lot of sorting out to be done, and it seems to me to be awfully early to be campaigning.
Yeah, let's bring in Vicki in Manitowoc. Hi, Vicki.
Good morning, and good morning, Mike Farrell.
Good morning.
I want to congratulate you and thank you for the role model that you represent for the rest of us who are citizens. I think that in Wisconsin we used to think we were this wonderfully progressive state. I think a lot of the states have slipped. The citizen role has declined hugely,
yeah.
And the media role has just ballooned. I think that the things that you do to articulate the causes really show us the stuff that we should all be doing, and I thank you.
Well, you are very sweet to say that, and I appreciate it very much, and I quite agree with you that we all need to be doing it. You have in that state an extraordinary man representing you in the United States Senate. Russ Feingold is one of the great heroes of American politics today. And I think that more people need to understand their responsibility as citizens. We all have to, you know, we're all in this boat, and we all have to be rowing, or it's going to be swept away by the current.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Vicki, for the call. Let's go to Harold in Superior. Hi, you're on the air.
Well, good morning. It's a
good morning.
Pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you very much.
question that I haven't heard much, and this is one that I came up with in my own mind. What is the difference between us bombing Iraq and invading Iraq and Japan bombing Pearl Harbor and the subsequent consequences of that?
Wow. Well, you know, the comparison is going to be odious in a lot of people's minds, and I don't think it's one that I want to I want to tread lightly into, but when one invades another nation preemptively, it is, I think, a hugely illegal and immoral and inappropriate act. And I believe that being those terms apply to both. I think you're quite right.
Yeah. Sharon and Shatek, hi, you're on the air.
Good morning, BJ.
Good morning.
you and I are contemporaries, I think. Anyway, I have a personal question. You don't have to answer if you don't want to. I made a very near connection with you. My boss's wife is a sorority sister of the lady you were married to in the 60s or 70s.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering if you had married again, if you have a family.
I have two kids as a result of my relationship with my marriage to Judy, and we remain close friends. She and her husband and my wife and I are very close, and I am now married to Shelley Fabere, a name some people know.
Mm-hmm.
And,
absolutely.
Thank you.
Wonderful.
And we've been married for 22 years.
Oh, fantastic. Other question, non-related, really not related to the topic you're talking about, but last night I watched twice the news clip on the Tuskegee Airmen.
Oh, yes.
And the last sentence of that just bothered me. They are to receive the medal, I guess one because it was a civilian medal and not military.
Yeah.
But there's a gold one that's going to the Smithsonian. But they will receive bronze. And I just felt after 60 years, that they should be on the gold standard and not the bronze.
Mike, we have less than a minute.
Bless you. Yeah. I couldn't agree more.
Yeah. Well, it's been a pleasure, and we appreciate your time. Thanks very much, and enjoy your time in the Midwest, even though you're not coming to Wisconsin.
I'm sorry about that. I'd love to be there, but they make a schedule, and I have to abide by it.
Maybe next time.
Thanks.
Mike Farrell, actor and activist. His just published memoir, Just Call Me Mike, A Journey to Actor and Activist. On a tour, a book tour. We'll be in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and Chicago, Illinois, and he'll be in St. Paul and Minneapolis all next week. Thanks very much to Leo Duran for producing this hour, and thanks to you for listening and for calling in. I hope you stay tuned. There's much more to come, including The Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.